darkness is not an affirmative force. It simply reoccupies the space vacated by the light.
This is the Hamilton Corner on American Family Radio.
And Urban Family Talk.
It should be uncomfortable for a believer to live as a hypocrite.
Delivering people out of the bondage of mainstream media.
And the philosophies of this world.
God has called you and me to be his ambassadors. Even in this dark moment. Let's not miss our moment.
And now, the Hamilton Corner.
Good evening. Welcome to the Hamilton Corner here on American Family Radio and Urban Family Talk. I'm your host, Abraham Hamilton III. I was out yesterday, but I was ably substituted for by Brian Fisher, a man who was the first one to give me an opportunity to host on the American Family Radio Network. I don't know how many of you remember may be aware of that. I know this guy is aware of it because he was a part of it. But the very first time I was on the American Family Radio Network hosting any program, it was on the Focal Point with Brian Fisher, where I substituted for him while he was out. So it was pretty interesting to see him substituting for me while I was out yesterday. It's a great, great day. Thank you so much for tuning into the program. Most of you, as you are making your way from your full-time jobs to your part-time jobs, I'm so grateful that you have allowed me to accompany you on that transition. And I just want to encourage you that when you show up for your full-time jobs, show up. Let the fullness of all that God has made you to be brought to bear on what happens in your family. As I say always, we will never be able to out public policy or even out church deficiencies in our family lives. Oh, that's right, Eddie. But the first time I was on the American Family Radio Network was on Focal Point. Today's Issues was second. That is the truth. That is the truth. All right. I didn't plan on talking about this now, but have you guys saw, I mentioned it to you guys before we got started, the case in Dallas where the young man by the name of Botham Jean, from born in St. Lucia, was shot and killed in his own apartment when an off-duty police officer, though still in uniform, came to what she's saying she thought was her home, entered it and thought there was an intruder in her home. And I know, and I don't want to get ahead of the prosecutors in the case. I know what it's like to try to handle a case that's getting a lot of media attention. The district attorney's office in Dallas County said that the investigation is ongoing. They have charged the police officer, although they charged her 4 days after she shot and killed Botham Jean. And even when in charging him, she was never detained. She was basically charged and allowed to make bond. And now it's awaiting an indictment. It's so much that doesn't add up with that case. I read the arrest affidavit, which is what is promulgated when you have a person who's arrested after the heat of the initial moment fades. So you have to draft an affidavit that will be part of an arrest warrant. I have never in all my life read an arrest affidavit that was so favorable to the person charged with the crime in my life. I've never read that in my life. And it's amazing to me. I mean, clearly, if Botham Jean had entered somebody else's apartment wrong and shot and killed somebody, there's no doubt in my mind he would be in jail. So what's going on, man? It stinks completely. It stinks completely. And then the charge is manslaughter, where I'm very familiar with the Texas murder statute. Based on the facts, if they are what has been articulated thus far, I don't see how you have anything other than a murder charge. The district attorney has said that, and I know this to be true, when you have a grand jury investigation being conducted and you have a case being presented to a grand jury, there's nothing that prohibits the grand jury from returning an indictment on a higher charge. But in order for that to happen, the prosecutors would have to present that higher charge as an option. So I'm resisting the temptation to jump the gun. I don't mean that, you know, to get ahead of the investigation. As I would encourage in all incidences, when there is an investigation underway, I think it would be irresponsible to weigh in and make a conclusion before all the facts are presented. But I got to tell you, this thing stinks to high heaven. I mean, this man was a minister in his church. He was a minister in the Church of Christ. He had their video out of him just last Sunday, or the Sunday prior to him being murdered, leading his congregation in the congregational worship time. He worked in the finance industry at Price Waterhouse Cooper. I mean, this it stinks, folks. It stinks from what I see so far. And as I stated, I'm interested to see how this plays out. I'm interested to see when. There should be no question of if, but you know, I'll say it for the sake of completion. If and when an indictment is returned, I want to see what the charge is, and I want to see if there are any additional facts that come out other than what we know. I mean, you know, I understand that the rigors of, you know, law enforcement are very dangerous. I've done numerous ride-alongs. I've worked with police officers for over a decade. But I don't know if you get that exhausted that you just forget what house you're in. You know, she, according to the statements that were presented, she said that she used her key. There are these new electronic keys, and the door came open. Well, there are other witness statements saying they heard her banging on the door saying, "Let me in." So you have all this conflicting testimony. But I have to tell you, this thing stinks. This thing stinks. And this is one of those issues. And I think everybody in their right will rightfully agree that we do owe a duty of respect and deference to law enforcement officers, considering the inherent dangers of their job. But simultaneously, I think most reasonable people will also agree, as in all areas where you have, you know, the power and influence of government, we certainly need to keep law enforcement officers accountable. And just some questions: is there any doubt whatsoever? Had Botham Jean ventured into her apartment accidentally or whatnot and shot her, would you think he would be out on bond and charged with manslaughter? I don't think so. Now, is that deference because he's a police officer? Possibly, but when does that deference get to be ridiculous? And I think that's the question that many of us are asking. And I didn't plan to go on long with this, cutting into my time of scripture, but it's just something in my mind that I'm just kicking around. That this stinks, and having prosecuted in the state of Texas, not in Dallas County, in Harris County, I can't imagine what factors contributed toward this, what at best can be described as, this is fishy, at worst described as an abuse of power. So we'll see what happens. As we get more information, as the indictment comes down, I will discuss it. And frankly, I plan on, at the appropriate time, doing a full review of the facts that are available to discuss this particular case. So that said, I intended to start in the book of Daniel. I've already flittered away most of this first segment. Is this going to go up on the Friday summaries, Jeff? Yucks. Daniel chapter 3. I just want to make one point, but there are multiple verses I have to mention. James chapter 3. I'll read verses 16 through 27. And this deals with the three Hebrew boys that were friends and contemporaries of Daniel. I like to refer to them by their Hebrew names, Azariah, Mishael, and Hananiah, that are commonly referred to as Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. The reason why I like to refer to them by their Hebrew names is because Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego are the names that Nebuchadnezzar gave them once they were brought into Babylon. Those are the Babylonian names that Nebuchadnezzar used to refer to them by. But the Hebrew names for these boys were Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. Having said that, the Bible is explicit in discussing the fact that when they were brought to Babylon, that they were yeled, which means when we talk about them as three Hebrew boys, they were boys only when they were first brought, but they didn't remain boys. They grew up just as Daniel grew up while they were in Babylon. Now, that being said, where we catch up to them in Daniel chapter 3, they are no longer boys here. The boys have now become men, having grown up within the Babylonian system and the Babylonian nation. And they're now at the place what they engaged in as boys, what I refer to as the table of testing under Nebuchadnezzar's eunuch. They have grown up into men to the point to where Nebuchadnezzar now has erected this 90-foot gold statue, has required everybody under his jurisdiction to bow to the statue. Once the right tune was played in the nation, everybody is expected to bow. I would remind you that Daniel and the Hebrew boys were not the only Hebrews there, but they were the only ones recorded in these scriptural accounts as not bowing to Nebuchadnezzar, which should give you an indication not everybody who professes to be Christian will do Christian. You get what I'm saying? So here we are, where word now has come to Nebuchadnezzar that the Hebrews, particularly Azariah, Hananiah, and Mishael, refused to bow to his statue. And Nebuchadnezzar offers them, it's not like a last-minute plea deal. All right, now I've heard this charge against you, but now that you're in court, if you're willing to plead guilty, then I'll change your sentence. So you no longer have to face the wrath, the capital punishment that is the fiery furnace. So verse 16, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego answered and said to the king, O Nebuchadnezzar, we have no need to be careful in answering you in this matter. If this be so, our God whom we serve is able to deliver us from the burning fiery furnace, and he will deliver us out of your hand, O king. But if not, be it known to you, O king, that we will not serve your gods or worship the golden image that you have set up. Then Nebuchadnezzar was filled with fury, and the expression of his face was changed against Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. He ordered the furnace heated 7 times more than it was usually heated. And he ordered some of the mighty men of his army to bind Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego and to cast them into the burning fiery furnace. Then these men were bound in their cloaks, in their tunics, their hats, and their other garments, and they were thrown into the burning fiery furnace. Because the king's order was urgent and the furnace overheated, the flame of the fire killed those men who took up Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And these 3 men, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, fell bound into the burning fiery furnace. Then King Nebuchadnezzar was astonished and rose up in haste. He declared to his counselors, did we not cast 3 men bound into the fire? They answered and said to the king, true, O king. He answered and said, but I see 4 men unbound, walking in the midst of the fire, and they are not hurt. And the appearance of the 4th is like a son of the gods. Then Nebuchadnezzar came near to the door of the burning fiery furnace. He declared, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, servants of the Most High, come out and come here. Then Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego came out from the fire, and the satraps, the prefects, the governors, and the king's counselors gathered together and saw that the fire had not had any power over the bodies of those men. The hair of their heads was not singed, their cloaks were not harmed, and no smell of fire had come upon them. Oh, my goodness. Every time I read that, I get so stirred and so encouraged, because in the time that we live in, the understanding of Christianity has been so corrupted, as it's presented oftentimes with prosperity gospel and, you know, this kind of easy laissez-faire type of approach to Christianity, where we think anything that is difficult could not be God glorified. And in this particular instance, you have a demonstration where these men count the cost. And this is what I say all the time. Faith is not something that denies reality, but it persists in light of reality. So to say it differently, it's not faith-filled to deny the fact that things have gotten difficult in our country in a lot of different ways. That's not faith to ignore that things have gotten difficult. Faith persists and says, in despite of what I know happening around us, there is a reality that supersedes what I perceive with my natural capacity to reason. The Hebrew boys said, oh, I know that there is a fiery furnace to pay, but the God that I serve supersedes my reasoning concerning being burned in this fiery furnace, which is why they said to Nebuchadnezzar, we're not going to bow to your stinky statue. And we know we may get burned up. And even if God doesn't deliver you from the sentence of being burned up, we know that our God is so awesome, we will still not bow to you. And the glorious reality is that their willingness to follow the Lord down to the wire set the stage for not only them to see the Lord show up on their behalf, but it set the stage for Nebuchadnezzar and his prefects, his satraps, his governors, and all of the highfalutin folks in Babylon to see there's a 4th man that shows up when these guys get pressed. So my simple encouragement to you today is, if you find yourself being pushed to the margins, remember, sometimes the Lord shows up on the front end, but sometimes because the Lord is working an additional weight of glory that he wants to show himself mighty on your behalf, even in the middle of the fiery furnace.
There's problems in the planet. I am Matt Staver with Freedom's Call. Planet Fitness Leesburg has violated Florida law and its own policy by allowing a man to sexually harass females in the women's locker room. A woman we call Mrs. H went into the locker room after her workout. There she found a man dressed in sweatpants and a tank top putting on makeup. But he refused to leave for more than an hour. And the Planet Fitness staff permitted the man to monopolize the locker room and deny Mrs. H her privacy. Then he chased her into the parking lot and called the police saying that he had been sexually harassed. And get this, Planet Fitness then canceled Mrs. H's membership. This is a violation of Florida law and the policies of Planet Fitness. Liberty Council is demanding that Planet Fitness reinstate our client's membership and protect the privacy and safety of all women. Stay informed about this issue at our website, lc.org. That's lc.org.
Announcing the latest book from Dr. Robert Jeffress.
It's called Choosing the Extraordinary Life, God's Seven Secrets for Success and Significance. And, you know, it's a book about how to experience in the here and now what God has for you.
So your assignment today, people, is to go buy a copy of Robert's new book.
Choosing the Extraordinary Life by Dr. Robert Jeffress. Available now at afastore.net.
afastore.net, afastore.net. Yeah. I'll say it again, afastore.net.
Right.
Imagine you're back to school shopping and your little girl comes running from the restroom in tears saying she saw a man in there. Sadly, scenes like this are playing out at Target stores across the country. Their policy is to allow men into women's restrooms and fitting areas. If some of us don't stand up and say this is wrong, what comes next? Protect your family and send Target a message by doing your back to school shopping elsewhere. Learn more and sign the Boycott Target Pledge at afa.net.
Brian Fisher here with today's Life and Liberty Minute. Yesterday was a solemn anniversary of the day devout Muslims attacked the United States and killed 2,977 innocent Americans. We must never forget that Islam has been at war with the Christian West since the days of Muhammad himself. For 1,400 years, this dark religion, the creation of Satan, has dedicated itself to the extermination of Christianity and the followers of Christ. This conflict between Allah and Christ is a matter of urgent spiritual warfare. Islam represents the dark, unseen armies of Satan coming against Christ's people and the unseen armies of heaven. Our prayers are essential to the defeat of the dark prince of Islam. And let's also never forget that greater is he who is within us than he who is with the world of Islam.
Catch Brian Fisher on Focal Point, weekday afternoons at 105 Central on American Family Radio.
Shining light into the darkness, this is the Hamilton Corner on American Family Radio
and Urban Family Talk.
America has been an exceptional nation, the exceptional nation in the world, for 240 years, because we had founders that understood the importance of putting a harness on the growth and reach and power of government. Yes. They understood that when you put that harness on government's intrusion in our lives, liberty flowers in our lives. They said it best in that second paragraph of the Declaration of Independence. We hold these truths to be self-evident. My dad used to say that was a highfalutin way of saying any knucklehead should get this. That we are endowed by our Creator with certain unalienable rights, which fundamentally means that our human rights are not grants from government. They are gifts from God.
Welcome back to the Hamilton Corner here on American Family Radio and Urban Family Talk. That was the voice of my guest who is on with me now, none other than Ambassador Ken Blackwell. He served in numerous roles, for example, Senior Fellow for Human Rights and Constitutional Governance at the Family Research Council. He's been the mayor of the city of Cincinnati, Treasurer and Secretary for the State of Ohio, Undersecretary at the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development, the U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations Human Rights Commission. He is a national best-selling author and a member of the Policy Board of the American Civil Rights Union. Please welcome to the program, Mr. Ken Blackwell.
Good day, sir. Good to be with you.
I am glad to be with you as well. So I saw a piece that you released yesterday titled Houston, We Have a Problem. And I thought this piece was important to discuss right now as we are in the throes of the midterm election season. And in the article, you underscore the fact that there have been a little bit of voting irregularities with people being listed multiple times on voting rolls, even dead people voting, not in far-left California or the regressive capital of the world of New York, but in the great state of Texas. So if you would, let the AFR listeners know a little bit about the piece that you wrote yesterday called Houston, We Have a Problem.
Well, as a former Secretary of State and the top election official in the state of Ohio, I've been concerned for years now with the fact that our voting rolls and voting our registration rolls need to be cleaned up because when they are full of multiple registrations by one person, you create opportunities for fraud and you create opportunities for confusion and doubt. And whether those who are attacking our election system, the integrity of our election system, or foreign actors or mischievous domestic criminals, one of the things that they want to do is to create confusion and doubt about the credibility of the outcomes of our elections. And so this piece basically says that when you begin to look at the analysis that's been done in Texas, particularly by both statistics, which is a data analysis firm, and they found a disturbing number of duplicate registrations and multiple votes in the state of Texas, taking a hard look at 2008, 2012, and 2016. And for instance, what they found was it appears that 104,800 people registered more than once. They show that 2,100 or so of these voting pairs appear to have cast ballots in the same election. And when you think that there are local and statewide elections that are decided by a handful of votes, like in Florida in 2000, less than 600 votes separated the winner from the loser, cleaning up our voter rolls becomes an imperative. And so that's the fire that I'm trying to light under state election officials. We need to clean up voter registration rolls across the country in order to protect the integrity of our system. And when you couple that with the president's initiative and his executive order that he discussed today to protect us against the intrusion of foreign actors, you can begin to see a domestic plan to clean our clean up our elections and to make sure that those who are casting ballots are confident in the results that occur.
Yeah, absolutely right. And as you referred to, President Trump did issue an executive order today highlighting his efforts to target and prohibit foreign actors from being able to gain a foothold and really muck up our election process. Now,
Right. Now,
of course, when you say we need to clean up our voter rolls, and you see, generally speaking, it is Republicans all over the country that are fighting for things like voter identification laws. The immediate refrain from people that I refer to as regressives instead of progressives, because they're not moving anything forward, they're moving us back as a nation, they argue that any efforts to do what you're asserting, cleaning up voting rolls or requiring identification at voting booths, is racist. What
right.
do you say to that?
Well, many of those folks believe in voters without borders. And so many of those are the same advocates that believe that we should not have border enforcement on our physical borders. They believe that voters should be able to move at their will to affect outcomes that are desirable by those on the left who are slow to react to opportunities and needs to clean up our system. Look, at the end of the day, we start by the fact that let's just take voter ID, for example. Just think about all of the things in our lives where we have to show some form of ID, photo ID, whether it's to get on a plane, to take out a library book, you know, to cash a check. I mean, you name it. Photo IDs are an everyday item in our everyday lives. And so any reaction that this somehow is a repressive or suppressive act to require that for voting and to make sure that people who are casting a vote are who they actually claim to be is sort of absurd on its face. And so we continue to work to help people understand that we have a right to a good election and the right to cast the ballot, and we should make it as easy as possible. But there's a flip side. There's a civic responsibility to make a little effort to make sure that our system is a system full of integrity. And if that requires us to take a step as simple as a photo ID, we should be willing to take it. So there's a balance there between voting rights and citizenship obligations.
Mm-hmm. Now, many people who would oppose any efforts to clean up voting rolls and enact voter ID laws, they would say that, well, why are you making a big deal out of this, Ambassador Blackwell? Any evidence of voter fraud is minimal and has little to no impact on our elections at all. So why would you want to waste the taxpayers' time in focusing on something like this?
Well, if you understand, just what I use one example in Florida in 2000, there 580-odd votes made the difference in who was the president of the United States. I could go back to when Carter was campaigning and in the race for the presidency against Gerald Ford. Mm-hmm. Carter won Ohio by less than 6,000 votes, which meant that was less than one vote per precinct in the state of Ohio. Mm. You know, so if you just change one vote per precinct in the state of Ohio, Ford would have retained the presidency and Carter would have been on his peanut farm. So, you know, at the end of the day, one vote matters. And the other thing that I always tell people is that when you understand the vulnerability of our systems, whether that's through criminal activity in cyberspace, or through fraudulent voter registration, one of the things that you want to do is to protect the integrity by forward thinking. Mm-hmm. You don't always want to be responding to bad deeds. You know, I want my bank to be secure. I don't want my money stolen and then folks scratching their heads saying, well, if we had taken this simple action, we could have prevented that theft, that robbery. So, nothing is more important to our democratic republic than the integrity of our election system. That's why I applaud the president's efforts today and with his executive order, the work that Homeland Security is doing. Just last month, they held the first ever national election cybersecurity tabletop exercise, which was focused on improving the information sharing and the integration of election security efforts across our 50 states. So we're all in this together, and we must take every step, every precaution that we can take to protect our systems from threats, both foreign and domestic.
I agree with you 100%. And it's amazing, as you rightly highlighted, you have to have an ID to do some of the most mundane and routine actions that we do on an everyday basis. I mean, I don't know what could be considered more important to our perseverance as a constitutional republic other than in ensuring that the people who are participating in our electoral processes are the actual people who are responsible for holding the government accountable.
Accountable, absolutely. And, you know, I am sure that I will have an opportunity to come back and we can do an even deeper dive. But let me just applaud you for, you know, just putting a spotlight on this, not only the threat to the integrity of our system, foreign and domestic, but by underscoring, you know, the fact that there is both voting rights and citizenship obligations that we all can take to make sure that we get this right.
Thank you so much, Ambassador Blackwell, for coming on the program. How could our listeners keep up with your work and all the different things that you're doing? You have your hands in a lot of stuff going across our country.
Well, go to frc.org. They have my writings, or also thestream.org. And I think if you go to those two locations, you can keep up with my activities and my writings.
All right. Thank you so much for joining the program today. We have to have you back on in the future.
Yes, sir. All the best.
All right. All the best to you as well. It raises a great point, you know, and one of the things that I think that has to be discussed, because I know that I had people who suggest, like when Ambassador Blackwell said that, well, there's some people who are interested in having voters without borders, that I've had conversations with people who say, well, there's nobody who actually believes that, you know, and I had to go through the process of showing actual writings, actual documentation, actual articles, actual fundraising mechanism, actual evidence that you have people like George Soros' Open Society. What does that mean? Why is he allocating a certain percentage of his investment revenue that he makes every year to fund his Open Society? That there are real people in the world who do believe in open borders, but they take advantage or even create modern controversies in order to advance these ideas, but they do it in an incremental fashion. Whereas their ultimate objective is open borders, but they will capitalize on conversations about, you know, quote unquote, children being separated from their parents at the border, even though it was not a policy created. It was a policy enforced, and there were prior administrations of multiple parties, frankly, who engaged in similar activities, you know, and it's unfortunate. And so when I've responded to people, say, well, wait a minute, the entire premise or assumption in the whole idea that parents being separated from children at the border, the premise is that coming across our border illegally is not a crime. Because when I then offer, well, what about American citizens who get arrested for a crime in our country, even if it's something like driving without a license, driving while your license is suspended, do their children get to go with them into the prison, into the jail? Of course not. But the entire idea behind that concept is that, well, it shouldn't be a crime anyway to enter the country illegally. Now, that is not what is stated. That's not the official statement that is made, but that is the assumption that is intrinsic to that conversation that never gets stated. And so I just wanted to share this piece because Ambassador Blackwell goes through some of the statistics from this investigation in Texas, where they show, as he stated, 104,800 people appear to be registered more than once. 104,800 people registered more than once. 45,858 of the registrants appear to have voted more than once in at least one general election, according to the records provided by the Texas State Board of Elections. I mean, the things in this study were remarkable to review. I'm trying to find, where is it? Let me get it. According to Votistics, they discovered that more than 3,000 people who cast ballots, they apparently were older than the world's oldest known person. I mean, come on. These are the types of things. When I saw that, I was like, good gracious. And in 2016 alone, nearly 800 people in Texas above the age of 100 appear to have voted, most of them voting in person. After that statistics, Ken Blackwell wrote, either the location of the Fountain of Youth is a few hundred miles off, or there's a lot of voter impersonating going on. I mean, these are things that we have to grapple with. And if we want to preserve the integrity of the American Republic, don't you think we need to clean up voting rolls?
Good news. You are not stuck with your healthcare plan. Really. You have a choice, and it's a great one. It's called MediShare, and if you've heard about it and wondered what exactly it is, it's a way that people share their healthcare bills, and these are people who have a common faith, who want to be part of something beautiful that not only meets their healthcare needs, but the needs of others, too. And it's people who love to save money, big time. MediShare members typically save $500 a month per family on their healthcare costs. That is a life changer for people. So this could be for you. Maybe it's what you've been looking for, a way to pay healthcare bills that's not only very smart financially, but it's even profound. MediShare is a nonprofit with 400,000 members nationwide who pray for and share with each other. So yes, you're not stuck. There's another way, and it could save you a lot. Hit *345 to find out how much you can save on your healthcare. Message and data rates may apply. That's *345.
Once saved, always saved. This is David Wheaton, host of The Christian Worldview. It's an age-old debate about whether a Christian can lose their salvation. Jesus gives a clear answer in John 10, where he says, "My sheep hear my voice, and I know them, and they follow me, and I give eternal life to them, and they will never perish, and no one will snatch them out of my hand. My Father, who has given them to me, is greater than all, and no one is able to snatch them out of the Father's hand." Eternal security for the Christian is based on God's promise and power. When he adopts one into his family, he never unadopts that person. Hear more about eternal security at thechristianworldview.org. This weekend, we'll discuss the recent Dallas statement on social justice.
Listen to The Christian Worldview with David Wheaton, Saturday mornings at 8 Central on American Family Radio.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next. It's not exactly Ali versus Frazier, but Florida voters are bracing for a political heavyweight gubernatorial fight. On the right side of the ring, Congressman Ron DeSantis, backed by President Trump. On the left side of the ring, Tallahassee Mayor Andrew Gillum, backed by Bernie Sanders.
He is the most liberal candidate that the Democratic Party has ever nominated in the state of Florida by a country mile in a governor's race. He wants to abolish ICE. He wants a $1 billion tax increase. He wants a single payer healthcare system in Florida, which would bankrupt the state. I'm trying to make Florida even better. He wants to make Florida Venezuela.
The governor's race in Florida should give freedom-loving Americans major cause for concern. Nobody wants the Sunshine State turned to a third-world country, especially Venezuela. I'm Todd Starnes.
The Hamilton Corner podcast and one-minute commentaries are available at AFR.net and UrbanFamilyTalk.com. Back to the Hamilton Corner on American Family Radio
and Urban Family Talk.
Welcome back to the Hamilton Corner here in American Family Radio and Urban Family Talk. I'm going to transition to a bit of foolishness. I can't say du jour because I've been holding it in my stack to get to it, but other things kept crowding it out. But I want to give a bit of a disclaimer before I get into it, because I'm going to be dealing with some issues. As some parents, if you have some young children with you listening to the program, you may want to pause the show right now or come back to it at a later time, because I'm going to delve into the latest demonstration of transanity. Yes, folks, that is the insanity that has resulted from our country, and not just our country, our world and modern culture in Western civilization embracing transgender ideation. Now, I want to give everybody enough time to understand that's where I'm about to go, and I'll begin, and you're going to have to do some editing in your own mind when you hear the audio clip, because it's an audio clip I'm going to play from the British Broadcasting Corporation that uses terminology that I probably would not use, but you'll understand exactly what's happening. If you would, Jay, please play clip number 3.
Karen White was on remand for sexual offences she'd committed as a man against women when she told authorities that she now identified as transgender and wanted to go to a women's jail. After a full review, they agreed. Despite the nature of the crimes and her not undergoing any physical or legal gender transition. Whilst there, White sexually attacked female inmates, committing 4 assaults, and was transferred back to a male prison. Last week, White pleaded guilty to the assaults.
Now, I want to make sure you guys understand that. What's going on here, and of course, that's the BBC. They're broadcasting. So they use wording and terminology that I probably will, not probably, that I will not use. Here you have an individual who is calling themselves Karen White. But this individual was born Stephen Wood to his parents. He was born a male. As a male, under the name of Stephen Wood. And I want to give you the criminal history first before we start talking about the transanity, because it will show how insane the transanity actually is. Stephen Wood, as a man, has already been convicted from a 2001 sexual assault and a criminal conviction for indecency, gross indecency with a child, which required him in the UK to be a registered sex offender. All right? Stay with me now. Following that, there was the UK equivalent of a cold case investigation of rape allegations from 2003 that Stephen Wood, the man Stephen Wood, just pled guilty in 2016 for committing 3 cold case rapes of a woman. This 2016 guilty plea is the reason why Stephen Wood, who was incarcerated for rape, having already been a convicted sex offender, was now in custody in the UK. Stephen Wood then informs the prison officials in the UK that he now identifies himself as a woman, though he's never gone under any formal diagnosis for gender dysphoria, nor has he had any type of transition surgery. In spite of that, Stephen Wood, who's now identifying himself as 52-year-old Karen White, he is 52 years old, appealed to the UK prison officials for him to be sentenced to a women's only prison facility. Does anybody know where we're going next? After being incarcerated in the women's only, and I have the name of the facility right here, the women's only Newhall Prison near Wakefield, West Yorkshire, upon his arrival in the prison, Stephen Wood, identifying himself as Karen White, sexually assaults 4 women in the prison. Y'all understand what I'm saying here? So track with me on this. So you mean to tell me these prison officials, being fully aware of Stephen Wood's, aka Kevin White's, criminal history that includes not one, not two, but multiple cases of rape and sexual assault, including indecency with a child committed as a man, but now says that as a result of the magic that is transgender ideation, he's a woman, so put a convicted rapist, convicted for raping women, who still has the complete equipment to continue raping women, y'all get what I'm saying, put this convicted rapist in a prison facility with women. I'm sorry. What planet are we in? I hate to say it like this, but Ray Charles and Stevie Wonder could have saw that coming. This is ridiculous, guys. This is ridiculous. I gotta calm down. These are people who fancy themselves as experts in the area of criminal justice. You know how many people have to review the case, the criminal history, and the request before the request can be granted? And then after Stephen Wood, aka Karen White, abuses these women inmates, a spokesperson for the prison comes out and says, "We apologize sincerely for the mistakes which were made in this case." Really? You apologize? This is insane. This is not bad decision making. This is not, oh, well, you know, we just have to come up with a better criminal justice strategy. This is insanity, folks. And the fact that nobody said, we don't think it's a good idea to put a man who's convicted for raping women in a prison with women. I mean, oh my gosh, this gave me a headache earlier. I said, no, this can't be true. And so I was like, this has to be fake news. So I scoured the news, and it's reported by the BBC. It's reported by the Sun Sentinel in England. It's reported by the UK Telegraph. It's reported by the New York Post. It's reported all over. I shared the BBC's news report on this story, and I'm saying, we can't be. But folks, this is, and part of the reason why I want to report this story, because I think some of us, including myself, frankly, it's very easy for us to underestimate the amount of delusion that is prevalent in our current society. It's very easy for us to underestimate just how deluded people are, to where you will now put these women who are incarcerated, but they still are worthy of protection from predators. And you put these women in a position to be abused. This is the type of delusion that we're facing, folks. This is the type of delusion. And if I would not have read this and researched this myself, if somebody would have just told me on the street, you know, this happened, I'm like, come on. Really? Really? Yeah, this is where we are. So they put a convicted rapist in prison with women because he says he was a woman. We better wake up. We better wake up, because this is where we are. And these are the same people in the same country. I won't even say that. I'll leave that alone. I'll leave the story where it is. I move to the next story. I've been holding on to this one for a while. And this story is kind of a mixed bag, to where it's positive, but we need to wake up a little bit. So I talked at length about Assembly Bill 2943 in California, where what's this guy? Lowe. Stephen Lowe is the state representative, the state assemblyman in California, who filed this bill, Assembly Bill 2943, which would basically prohibit intentional or unintentional counseling or documentation that could result in a person who had same-sex attraction being counseled or moving away from that same-sex attraction. And I have a little bit of audio from a California state representative, Joel Anderson, who argued against this bill on the floor of the California state legislature. If you would, Jay, please play clip number 2.
If I had difficulty with my sexuality and I chose to seek out somebody to help me, counsel me through changing my sexual orientation, I could do that. And it's perfectly legal. But the notion that somebody who perhaps started gay can't seek out the same help. Now, I started out as heterosexual, but if I wanted to become homosexual or anything else, I could get that help. Now, we're not talking about people under 18. We're talking about adults. And we're not talking about con artists driving up and down our street with loudspeakers saying, hey, conversion therapy here. We're talking about adults seeking help because they're questioning. And because they're questioning to be straight, that somehow that's wrong and evil. But if they question to be gay, that's good and acceptable. You can't have it both ways.
And now you heard Representative Anderson say you can't have it both ways, but I think he really meant you can't have it one way. That you can transition one way, but not the other way, which is a point I've made repeatedly. But before I go more in on that story, I meant to bring this out. There was a line in this article discussing Stephen Wood, a.k.a. Karen White, when they were detailing his criminal history and his former rape convictions and sexual assault convictions, they said, quote, all her previous offenses had been committed when she was a man. You got that? All her previous offenses had been committed when she was a man. Which, when I saw that, I thought to myself, wait a minute. So you mean to tell me, is this an attempt to decry toxic masculinity now that these convictions occurred when she was a man, but now that she's a woman, all things are. And I thought, so when did he stop being a man? When did that happen? Now, this is a question that literally jumps from the pages from their own article. When did Stephen Wood stop being a man? Can you prove that genetically? Can you prove that biologically? Can you prove that scientifically? Of course not. Yet they put this man in a prison with women. Getting back to Assembly Bill 2943. So what ended up happening in California, there was a groundswell of opposition to this particular bill. If you remember, I had Brad Dacus from the Pacific Justice Institute who is fighting the good fight on the West Coast, where the Assembly Bill 2943 came on the heels of a great homeschool victory in the state legislature in California. But Brad Dacus lamented the fact that the Christian community in California didn't seem to be as unified to fight Assembly Bill 2943. Now, this is the bill that if you read the text of the legislation, that it could be construed to ban the purchases and sale of the Bible because it criminalizes the distribution of any literature that directly or could indirectly result in a person transitioning away from same-sex attraction. So somewhat late in the process, because Assembly Bill 2943 passed in the Senate at a vote of 25-11, and it was being brought back to the Assembly to be voted on. Now, to his credit, Representative Lowe, the author of the bill, he said himself that he listened to, I want to get his words, he says, quote, I knew this was an emotionally charged issue, so I spent the past few months traveling up and down the state, meeting with a wide variety of faith leaders. And as a result of his conversations with these faith leaders, he pulled the bill, which is worthy of our commendation. That's a great thing that he pulled the bill. But in an article discussing this, Michael Brown, who is an amazing author and apologist and just a great man of God, he wrote, why was it that this bill even was allowed to be filed in the first place? Why wasn't the body of Christ aware that this was happening? He also said, where has the body of Christ been? Because there are at least 11 other states that have passed legislation just like this. He named them: New York, Oregon, Arizona, Rhode Island, Nevada, Illinois, Vermont, New Jersey, Washington, New Mexico, and Kentucky. Not Kentucky, sorry. Connecticut have all passed very similar pieces of legislation. So the downside, though it is a victory that AB 2943 was stopped in California, the thing that Michael Brown was arguing for is, why is it that it seems that the body of Christ is almost always a dollar short and a day late to the party when we should be on the fence beforehand? Where have we been? And he also noted that Representative Lowe, Assemblyman Lowe, he's not said no to this bill. He's just said not yet, because he also said that, quote, he believes that we are on the side of the angels on this issue. Having said that, in order to get it right, why wouldn't we want to engage in meaningful, thoughtful, transformational relationships and conversations? Translation, he's planning to bring this bill back, but he's going to amend it somewhat. So where would the body of Christ be when that happens?
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.